CPS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow, now streaming on Paramount Plus, only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage, from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Bud Elliott. That's Tom Fornelli. I'm Chip Patterson, coming to you live at youtube.com/cover3 and everywhere you get your podcasts on demand. Thanks for hanging out. Smash that subscribe, smash that like, and come and join us in the chat, aka the Cover 3 Tailgate. Rocking and rolling here on a Monday. Hope you enjoyed your Super Bowl weekend. Congratulations to the Kansas City Chiefs. Phenomenal game. Incredible win for that group. A question that I think we will entertain a little bit later on in the show is, you know, let's talk about overtime a little bit and also how it might pertain to college football. We'll get into that in a little bit. So if you have been following us through the chaotic week that was last week, you know that we came with those sirens in your feed on Friday for the fact that Chip Kelly was leaving his position as UCLA's head coach to go be Ohio State's offensive coordinator. We'll have more on that, as well as where UCLA might be going to replace Chip Kelly, but we've got even more. And look, I apologize. This coaching carousel will never end. Tom pointed it out immediately, and now I just think it's going to keep going all the way to August. I don't even know if we're going to have an end to the coaching carousel. So, well, I don't know.
I mean, I was told by a couple people that this whole college to the NFL thing wasn't a big deal. But yet, here we are.
Here we are. Because the Alabama Crimson Tide, the program that did poach two sitting FBS head coaches to be coordinators, has now lost its offensive coordinator and its offensive line coach to the NFL. So we remember all of the wonderful moments of the Ryan Grubb era. Ryan Grubb, the longtime offensive coordinator for Kalen DeBoer. He was with him at multiple stops, has been with him for a long time. He is off to be the Seattle Seahawks' new offensive coordinator, and very significant. Offensive line coach Scott Huff has as well. So you think about the way that Washington offense was built. Joe Moore award-winning offensive line, a scheme in place with the quarterback and wide receivers being able to take advantage of the matchups that they were able to present, all the different shifts, all the different motions. Sure seems like offensive line, offensive coordinator, head coach had to all be in line. Now, two of those three pieces are gone. So Alabama is now searching for a new offensive coordinator, a new offensive line coach. It is February the 12th. But this isn't, I don't know any way to read this as this is A, just not good. Good, not good. It's not good for Alabama. And B, a very, very interesting challenge for Kalen DeBoer's year one that already had a certain fair share of challenges.
I agree, Chip, because if you think about this, like, Kalen DeBoer does not have a huge coaching tree. Mm. One of the reasons that he's had success is that he's managed to keep, you know, kind of largely the same assistant staff together, or quickly brought them back into the fold, you know, for like 15 years now. So this is tough. Like, I think Ryan Grubb is a really excellent offensive coordinator. Do you know who else thought that? Nick Saban, because he tried to hire him last offseason. So yeah, I think this is a bit of a blow for Alabama. Now, it's still DeBoer, so I would still expect them to largely be fine, because I think the head man really dictates it. But you know, if you're Ryan Grubb, you get to coach in the NFL, which is more fun, and you get to stay in Seattle where you're already living, as opposed to moving to Tuscaloosa. I mean, guys, I'm not moving to Tuscaloosa if I make millions in Seattle. I've lived in Tuscaloosa. Tuscaloosa's fine. In Seattle, I probably don't want to live in, but if I make a boatload of money, cool. I'm going to live in Seattle over Tuscaloosa. So
Seattle's very nice.
Yeah.
It rains a lot.
He wanted it. He wanted the Washington head coach job. He did not get the Washington head coach job. He had his family, you know, growing up in that area. He wasn't there for a very long time, but you understand what I'm saying. Like he clearly had something about being around there that was exciting to him. He wants to go back. Is there, to your point, Bud, something on a very basic, you know, somebody who doesn't know anything about these gentlemen, who doesn't know anything about college football. It's like, well, yeah. He was in Tuscaloosa for 2 weeks and said, I want to go home. But, you know, there's also the whole fact of, you know, this is the Seattle Seahawks. This is the NFL. So I understand on a lot of levels, I guess, why Ryan Grubb would be enticed by this. But, Tom, I keep on. So what happens now for Alabama?
I don't know. It's a weird time. Like, it's obviously, they're going to hire an offensive coordinator. They're going to hire an offensive line coach. Where are you going to go? As Bud mentioned, it's not like Kalen DeBoer has the deepest coaching tree. And it is a very different situation than what Alabama's dealt with in recent years, because Nick Saban was losing guys every single year, but he was Nick Saban. So he just had to reach out, find somebody. Okay, you do the job now. I think there's a higher likelihood that Kalen DeBoer calls plays next year. Like, I don't know if there's an offensive coordinator he's going to bring in who he's just going to hand the playbook to, considering the success he's had as a play caller in his time, which is a large reason why he's gotten the jobs he's gotten, why he's now at Alabama. So I would anticipate that could be different. We could see him bring in a name and somebody he trusts more to do it. I don't know, but it's an interesting thing because we are in February and there's still turnover, because after the signing day, you always see this. Position coaches start switching schools and you start moving on. You have to replace guys. But I do think, like Bud said, the wild card here is that it's Alabama and that it's DeBoer, who has typically had a very consistent staff everywhere he's been. So this is kind of different.
Yeah, I liked this comment from Sean. Says, what sitting head coach will Alabama pull to be the next offensive coordinator, ensuring that the coaching carousel never ends? Sean is in on the joke. Those of you watching live, by the way, we see that little piece of breaking news, and we'll get to it here in just a little bit. I would say our rundown is being rewritten as we speak. But before we do that, let's Alabama offensive coordinator candidates. Bud, you said
Sean Foster.
No, he's busy. He's busy.
He's busy, Tom. Okay. I mean, look, if you want to look internally, I would guess to Sean Foster. I would guess to Marcus Shepard, who's the receiver coach, did a really good job there, involved with the passing game. But again, this kind of goes back to scan Ryan Grubb's coaching tree. There are not a lot of obvious guys who are no doubt slam dunks. So if you look at what DeBoer's done, I don't know. This is going to be interesting to see, because it's not like he's part of a big coaching tree.
Does Tommy Rees have a job right now?
Yeah, he's with the Cleveland Browns. I think he's coaching tight ends. Another would coordinator leaving for an NFL job, by the way.
Would you take Tommy Rees back if he wanted to come back?
Who did Tommy Rees want to be the quarterback at Alabama? And who does DeBoer want to be the QB? I mean, that would sort of matter to me.
Well, you and I'm not you. Like, and
was
I.
the whole USF switch? Remember when they swapped it?
Of and
the
course.
Bama player, yeah. The Bama players no, were like, absolutely not. And they, yeah. I mean, they didn't throw the game, but I do think there was some real discontent there within that program about who the players wanted to be the QB. Whose side was Rees on there? I don't know. Like, is DeBoer committed to Milroe, or are they going to roll with Mac? Are they going to look for somebody else in the spring window? All questions that might factor into that decision.
DeBoer is a good people person from everything that I've heard. And as I said earlier, if he believes that the locker room wants Milroe, you keep Milroe as the incumbent until you absolutely cannot because of performance or injury reasons.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
If Rees doesn't want Milroe, then yeah, sure.
How big of a deal is this? We really don't know, because we it's like, I think clearly losing these guys is a big deal. The magnitude of the deal will be based largely on who they hire. Again, it's not that it's not par for the course. I do think it's kind of scummy to wait.
Oh, the 30-day window. We got to hit that. Sorry.
Yeah. Guys. I mean, come on, that's guys. Really?
So it was reported, right? Like, that's not even a rumor. Like, it was reported that part of the timing, because it came from the Seattle Times. And this is what stinks for Alabama, is that, you know, Seattle Times, like, now they've got their guys, they've got all the reporting. And, you know, Seattle Seahawks fans are like, well, why did it take so long? Seattle Times comes out and is like, well, yeah, it just took so long because they had to wait until the kids couldn't leave again. And I think that stinks, even though I would hope that if you decided to stay and you were on Alabama's roster, you had decided to stay because of Kalen DeBoer, not specifically because of Scott Huff or Ryan Grubb.
This is a great example of why the transfer portal is awesome, right? Because previously you wouldn't have been able to transfer out if they had pulled this stuff post-spring, right? Now, whoever they bring in, okay, like maybe you wanted to transfer out now. Now you can't because the window's closed. Now you can go to the spring window if you don't like who Kalen DeBoer brings in to be your offensive coordinator or your offensive line coach. So but now this is one of the reasons why I really love the transfer portal. Because teams try to pull scummy moves like this, and the actual impact on the player is not quite as negative as it could have been. Additionally, I mean, if you had done this 2 days earlier before the window closed, it still really doesn't matter, because not a lot of schools can get you into school right now anyway. I talked to some coaches about this over the weekend. And I guess if you're on quarters, maybe, but there are not that many schools that are on quarters, so...
You'd be a summer arrival, like wherever you're going to transfer, you're not going to be able to show up until summer workouts.
Right. So look, I mean, worst case, you don't like the guy he hires. You go through spring anyway. It's not like Bama strength conditioning sucks. You'll stay in good shape. Yeah, maybe you'll get to play some, a little more practice film, and then you bounce if you need to. But this used to matter more when players had fewer options and fewer freedoms, because teams would do stuff like this intentionally. And you really had no recourse.
Also, going back to the previous conversation, like Greg Byrne even said when they were interviewing Kalen DeBoer, they understood that there was a very high likelihood that Grubb would be leaving. So, like, when they were doing the interview for the process, DeBoer had other people in mind to be offensive coordinator in case Grubb did leave. Now, the dog and pony show of Grubb being linked with the Seahawks job, coming back to Tuscaloosa and saying, I'm going to be I'm your offensive coordinator, and then leaving for Seattle when there's a decent chance, we don't know for sure, but there's a pretty decent chance he knew he was not going to be the offensive coordinator at Alabama by that point. It's scummy. I don't like it at all. So, but yeah, you're right. They do have a chance to leave in the spring, but you mentioned, like, you know, the offensive line coach leaves. Alabama brought in a couple transfers from Washington. The offensive line, they might have transferred to Alabama to A, because it's Alabama, but B, to work again with their offensive line coach. And now he's leaving. So it's just, yeah, I don't like it. I get it. I understand why they're doing it. I don't like it.
It makes me not be in favor of a single portal window. And I believe that is one of the many suggestions that is out there. And As long as we live in the era of the never-ending carousel, then I do believe there should be multiple opportunities throughout a calendar year when players would be able to enter the transfer portal, and if they have that one-time transfer ability to transfer without penalty. Because guess what?
Coaches transfer portal.
Well, the coaches can transfer without penalty.
But I'm saying they should have a window. Coaches are only allowed to leave for other jobs at certain times. Work that into their contracts. They have them. Yeah. You can do it. Oh, they can't? Why not? Why won't that happen?
No, I'm just thinking about this selfishly, you know? I mean, somebody in the Cover 3 tailgate mentioned before the show, like, somebody was like, boo to Chip for the never-ending carousel. And then somebody followed up and was like, no, like, yay to Chip. What would we be talking about?
No, my point is just that you talked about how they want there to be like a, you know, one-time window. Who's pushing for that the hardest?
Coaches.
Yeah, I'm saying we should push for coaches to only be able to move at a certain time.
And to be fair, I've only heard that as one of many suggestions. Nobody has presented a full proof plan to fix the calendar. Everyone only has individual things that they want, and we haven't gotten anywhere close to an idea of what could make it better than what we have. Okay, we got to hit it. Coming up on the other side, late last week, Chip Kelly left his position as a head coach of a Big Ten football program to go be a coordinator for another Big Ten football program. That left UCLA open. And now, reportedly, it's been filled here on this Monday morning. We'll get into our reaction and more next.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on the Cover 3 podcast, no sirens here in your feed, but certainly breaking news for those of you, a lot of you here in the Cover 3 tailgate, you saw it just a few minutes ago. We saw it as well. According to ESPN's Pete Thamel, Deshaun Foster, the former UCLA player, assistant, superstar when he was there as a running back, he will be taking over as the next head coach, taking over for Chip Kelly. He was a student assistant. He was a graduate assistant. He was the running backs coach at UCLA from 2017 to 2023. And now it looks like he will be the head coach of the Bruins. Bud, sort of first thoughts on, you know, I don't know if you have you any encounters with him?
I don't know Deshaun well, but like I've met him a couple times.
Okay.
So he's actually been a coach of some capacity at UCLA for, I think,
like 7 years.
No, even back to his GA days.
I was going
to
say, he was a director of player personnel before we started calling them general managers.
So, I mean, he was UCLA student assistant in 13, grad assistant 14, 15, right? Then he went to Tech for 1 year as running backs. Then he was UCLA's running backs coach for 7 seasons. And then this is the first year where he was with the Raiders. So, again, I do think there's an element here to where should we give some deference to the decision makers because they have had a lot of time to evaluate Deshaun and how like he fits, operates, understands the program, you know, culturally. I think I'm willing to extend that. Now, I'm not really sure if UCLA's administration is a mess right now. Isn't their chancellor leaving? I think I saw. Yes. So. Mm-hmm. Like, what does that mean for AD Martin Jarmond? How much of that played into Chip's decision to leave as well? Now, this could also mean that they were just cheap, and they had to find a guy who was willing to accept it. I think they had to find a guy in a hurry. Finding a guy who was on staff in 23, makes some sense. But ultimately, man, I don't know. Like, I think this could work out, but my guess here is that the success or failure of Deshaun Foster is going to largely be dictated by the administration at UCLA. Like, how committed really are they to playing football at a championship level? Not a national championship level, but like of at least contending for a Big Ten championship. Their over under win total on our partner FanDuel right now is 5.5.
So and 6 looks tough when you look at the schedule.
It does indeed. Not a ton of talent on that roster. I think everybody wants to poach, but does this move maybe suggest that they want to prevent transfer portal exodus by getting a guy that many of the players on the roster already know? Again, they should be in the best position to evaluate and make the hire for a guy who's worked with you for 10 of the last 13 years. So I'm going to give them the deference that suggests they should get because I was not in that building. But certainly this is sort of the same thing as not the same thing. There are certain types of hires where, okay, that guy would only get hired for a job of this level at that school because of the connections to that school, or because it's sort of an internal promotion because they've had a chance to evaluate him. You know, I don't think Sherrone Moore would get a job the quality of Michigan if he was on the open market. You know, he would get a good job, but not a Michigan level job. But it's because Michigan had the opportunity to evaluate him in house for a long period of time that they got the job. So UCLA should know if they screw this up, that's on them.
Sean Foster is a great hire for UCLA. I have no idea if it will work out. I do think it makes a lot of sense in that it's an odd time when in early February, your head coach up and leaves to take an offensive coordinator job. Signing day has come through. You're not going to have the easiest time convincing a sitting head coach to leave their current job to come to you, which is why, like, when the candidates list first came out over the weekend and like PJ Fleck and all these guys are on, I was like, why the hell is anyway? But just like, no, I know why he was mentioned, but there's no way in hell he was ever going to leave. So you look at the situation, you want to act quickly. You have a very limited pool of applicants available to you. So you settle, or I don't mean to, not settle, but you choose the guy that you're very familiar with, the guy that, like Bud's saying, you have a good idea of who he is. And also you're getting a guy who clearly cares about your program. I mean, he played there. He's coached there for many years, and he wants to be your head coach. Good. All right, get him. But then even the stuff behind the scenes, part of the reason Chip left is because there wasn't the kind of financial commitment to the program that he felt was needed to really compete at the level that they want to compete. Not so much for national titles, but just to be a competitive program. They didn't have the NIL. And you look at it, there is a new chancellor coming in. And if you talk to UCLA fans, and there are fans out there, even though they're in LA, but they do exist, they're hoping that the new chancellor actually gives a damn about the football program, because the feeling is the current chancellor did not give a damn about the football program. It was just something they had. So that's interesting to see, but that will bring in the future, but also the money issues where UCLA, there's a reason it's going to the Big Ten, folks. Yes, they're going to get money eventually, but they also need to get more money eventually because that school has had some financial limitations and problems. They're operating at a loss right now from what I read. So they've got some issues to deal with, so they can't really make a huge splash hire. Not that there's a huge splash hire out there available to them. So I think that when you look at the situation and you kind of put all the pieces together, especially if you want to act quickly, Sean Foster makes a whole hell of a lot of sense. Will it work? I don't know.
Tony White also was at UCLA. He was not a second team All-American like Deshaun Foster was. He has not been a prominent member of the UCLA coaching staff over the last 13 years as Deshaun Foster has been. But with his sort of rise as the defensive recently and still as the defensive coordinator at Nebraska, you know, the buzz around him was such that at the end of this regular season, they restructure his deal. He goes from $1 million a year to 1.6. Now, what UCLA would be able to pay a head coach is more than 1.6. What they would be able to pay a head coach. Do you think Tony White got a decent shot at this or some? You mentioned PJ Fleck, but White made sense as potentially, but White also might've been like, hey, I'm only leaving this for that right now for blank. And blank might've been 4X what he's making right now or something that, you know, you just had the leverage and UCLA said, no, we're going to stay with, like we mentioned, something that we know, somebody who's here, somebody who can hit the ground running.
If you're Tony White, you also have to judge what jobs will come open next year if I put together two good years of defense at Nebraska, right? Like that's very possible you can get a better job than UCLA if Tony White's research suggests, hey, UCLA is broke, they don't have NIL, their administration doesn't support me, I'm not going to get what I need in terms of support staff salaries and all that kind of stuff, which does matter, by the way, when you live in LA. Like, it is hard to get good off-field people because you have to really pay them a lot more in LA than you would have to pay them in like Tuscaloosa. You know, you can find a place in Tuscaloosa for like $700 a month. I don't think you can really find a place in LA for $700 a month.
Maybe Martin. I'll tell you what, I'll be there for, and it's only going to cost you $9 million a year. With a salary pool of $6 million a year. How's that sound? Like you run it up to something where it's stupid And then UCLA ends up saying no, if you believe that there's that much ground to be made up in all those other different areas. That's one way it could have gone, potentially.
Yep.
All right, UCLA's schedule. In 2024, first year of Big Ten play, Bud already mentioned that on FanDuel, make every moment more, we're dealing with a 5.5 win total. Tommy, going over or under UCLA, led by Deshaun Foster, year one of him at the helm, over or under 5.5 wins for the Bruins in 2024?
I mean, I feel like I have to go under looking at this off the top of my head because it's at Hawaii. Okay, we're going to win that game, I think. We should. We better. Indiana at home should win. Maybe win. Hope you win. That'd be a very bad start to the tenure if you're losing at home to Indiana to begin. That'd be a very Chip Kelly-esque start to your coaching tenure. Your next three games at LSU, no. Oregon, doubt it. At Penn State, nuh-uh. Minnesota, maybe. Maybe. Give you a chance there. At Rutgers, maybe, but you're on the road. At Nebraska, maybe, because Nebraska is Nebraska, but I think Nebraska will actually, for the first time forever, actually be better next year. Iowa at home, at Washington, I don't know. It's hard to know what Washington is going to look like next year. That game might be more winnable than you think, but you're still going to Seattle, so I'm going to still mark that down as probably not.
I would favor UCLA over Washington.
Really?
Yeah. UCLA.
You love Ethan Garber's that much?
I mean, Washington lost, what, 20 of 22 starters?
Yeah, but UCLA kept how many starters?
Yeah, I mean, I thought UCLA was a little bit better than the record last year. I don't think it's guaranteed they miss a bowl, depending on what happens. Well, excuse me. If they had not just had a coaching change, and we will see what happens with the portal now that they have their 30-day window, although I don't think anybody of importance has jumped in quite yet, largely because there's nowhere to go right now. So why would you? But I could see them making a bowl game because I don't think Washington's that great. I'm not convinced Iowa's offense is going to be any better. It almost has to be.
But Iowa's offense doesn't have to be better. They still win 10 games. Like,
yeah, but they, I mean, but what their FanDuel total came out at what? 6.5?
Yeah, but that's.
Like, no, I think that's an overreaction.
More difficult too. But
it got bet up to 7 or 7.5 now. I saw, but yeah.
I'm just saying, looking at the schedule, find me 6 wins. Like, tell me, you feel comfortable about winning at Hawaii. You feel comfortable about beating Indiana. There's 2. You feel comfortable about beating Fresno. There's 3.
Yep.
Your other home games are USC, Iowa, and Minnesota, and Oregon. How many of those do you really feel comfortable about UCLA winning?
Well, you beat USC this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
a USC, mess of a US at the end of the year when they were checked all the way.
It was still Caleb.
Yeah, do not be confident about USC looking much different next year.
I mean, I think they could look different, but it's not a guarantee. At Rutgers, again, we've said on the show before all this stuff went down, like we didn't think a game was going to be easy, but you're still likely favorite at Rutgers, I think. You know, Nebraska, how does their offense look? I mean,
they got a 5-star QB now, but
they're going to
win 13 games.
We'll see how he plays as a freshman. I think UCLA can make a bowl game pending who else gets plucked off this roster.
J. Michael Sturdivant still got eligibility?
Yeah.
And he's still there, right?
He's there. Jay Toya's there. A couple other guys are there. I scanned it earlier. It's like, those are guys that I think you would look at.
Yeah, that's the high end in terms of just like
What kind of condition is this team going to be in early October after they play LSU, Oregon, and Penn State 3 weeks in a row?
Now, that's a really good point.
During the middle of a 6-game stretch. That'll be because they start in Hawaii, so you get that week 0 game or whatever, and then you've got the bye, but then you've got 6 straight, and that includes 3 in a row of at LSU, Oregon, at Penn State. This team could be beat to hell by October.
We talk about highly touted players in terms of like the way that they're boasted about. I think in the transfer portal era, we need like who gets qualified as a coveted player. UCLA might have like 3 highly coveted players at the top of that roster, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound right? Okay. Sounds about right. Deshaun Foster, again, named the UCLA head coach. He now goes about the business of trying to put together the spring practice plan, trying to hire the staff, retain the roster, and figure out what he's going to need and if UCLA can be players in the spring portal window when we get to that coming up a little bit later in May. Again, breaking news here on a Monday during the show. UCLA, we no longer need to talk about the latest on UCLA's search, because UCLA's search has concluded with Deshaun Foster.
Oh.
Yes.
Bye. I want to do something. I think if you are an AD, don't you try to change the contract end date, or at least change when the buyout drops? Because these NFL teams, we know, hate paying buyouts for coaches.
So it's like February?
Yeah. If I, like, you know, look, I'm all, for smart, players, yeah. I'm all for players' rights, but if I'm an AD, I'm trying to write these contracts now to where, if you're leaving for the NFL, your buyout can't, like, won't drop until, you know, let's call it like February 1st.
But
because the number of places that players can actually transfer out to at that point is really low, because everybody's academic calendar is already like pretty, you know, pretty far advanced. And it gives my new staff hire 3 months to work with the new guys. And if I'm confident in making a good hire, then maybe the guys will actually like who I hire. And not
coaches leaving. Coaches leaving to the NFL is not a problem. Why would we need to change the way we do things?
Well, I think the calendar is the reason you do it. Like nobody would agree to do it in like for college to college jobs, right?
But you would still.
No, it's a good idea if you're an AD. That is definitely something worth considering.
Like nobody would ever sign it for like, hey, this is a buyout if you leave for a college job. But we do see destination specific buyouts.
Right. So like, buyouts drop annually. They drop once every year. And what Bud is talking about is that a lot of buyouts are like December 15th, you know, like after the regular season, or January 1st. And so if that buyout, you know, is $8 million a year over 4 years, talking about $32 million buyout for head coach Joe Schmo. Now, if, as Bud is suggesting, it's going to be all the way out until February, does that help your coach from getting poached for the NFL?
Yeah, like a peek behind the curtain here, Chip. Remember when we first started working for CBS, our contracts expired in November.
Yeah, it was problematic.
So our bosses would have an option, like when our contracts were coming up, are we going to extend these guys or are we going to fire them in November with the bowl season and the playoff games and everything coming up? They wised up to that after a few years and changed it. But Chip and I, we were able to.
Are you guys over the summer now?
Hey, listen. I need to be bribed by insiders. Okay, I don't have a sports media reporter banging on my door willing to do some horse trading for contractual information. They want to tell you all about all these other guys. Nobody's trying to get a front page headline about Chip Patterson's contract, but. Yeah, they have adjusted. We're no longer dealing with November re-updates. It's more employer friendly now.
Yeah.
All right. Coming up on the other side, the whole reason why the UCLA job was open was because Chip Kelly left to go to Ohio State. Bud and I got you with those sirens in your feed on Friday. Want to get Tom's thoughts on that, plus the Kentucky offensive coordinator search, more shifting on Sharon Moore's staff. Goodness gracious. Talk about similar to Kalen DeBoer, someone who's got their hands full with trying to get everything together in time for spring, and much, much more next.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a CAN model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000
$15,000
a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out. And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Let's go! It's the most all-star-studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
Back here on the Cover 3 podcast, as we have, yes, Alabama needs a new offensive coordinator, a new offensive line coach after the moves over the weekend. UCLA needed past tense, to replace Chip Kelly. They have already, as of Monday morning, tapped former assistant and former star Deshaun Foster to take over there. But Chip Kelly to Ohio State, Tom, I wanted to pick your brain on this one because I know you wrote about it for CBSSports.com on the site. Definitely go check that out as well. So as we get into some of these other assistant coaching carousel moves, how do you think Kelly's addition, what stands out to you the most about his move to go join the Buckeyes rock star football program heading in 2024?
It's crazy. It is wild in that a Big Ten head coach is leaving a Big Ten job to go be a Big Ten offensive coordinator. So from that angle, it's nuts. Looking at everything else and understanding the situation, it starts to make more sense. And understanding Chip Kelly, I don't think it's crazy because Chip Kelly, like we talk about with the panic about coaches leaving for the NFL and how it's just they can't take all these new rules and all this stuff. Chip Kelly never liked doing this to begin with. Like Chip Kelly has just been a dude who wants to coach football. Even going back to the Oregon days, like they recruited well. They used Nike and their influences. And I remember like, you know, thinking of the LaMichael James and the stuff in Texas. I cannot remember the bag man's name that they got in trouble with. But
Elliot Miles?
Yeah, there we go. But Chip was always just a dude who wanted to draw up plays and like run plays. So like when it came to recruiting, Chip really wasn't the recruiter. He wasn't on his guys to be like, we got to get out there getting all the talent. Then he goes to the NFL. It doesn't work. And then when he's back, you know, he spends a year in the studio at ESPN and like Tennessee was open. Florida was open. UCLA was open. I don't know how interested Tennessee ever was, but it came down to basically like Florida and UCLA. We knew were interested. And most people were like, well, he's going to take the Florida job. Why the hell would you take, you know, UCLA over Florida? And I wrote at the time, he's going to take the UCLA job because he doesn't want to recruit. In going to Florida, you're going to have to do it. Like, why did Dan Mullen get fired again despite winning the division twice? So, and then he ends up taking the UCLA job. But when he took that UCLA job, there was no transfer portal. There was no NIL. It was a job in Los Angeles where, again, UCLA fans want a new chancellor who gives a damn about football. Chip Kelly was at a job where he was kind of just able to do what he wanted to do, coach football. Couldn't do that anymore. So now he's leaving to be Ohio State's offensive coordinator where he's just going to be able to draw up plays and coach football. And depending on how things go, he might not be there very long, you know, if they lose to Michigan again. But it's just, it's one of those situations. But the larger part to me is, and this is what I wrote about, each of these coaches has their own reasoning for doing what they've done. Whether you're Jeff Hafley or Chip Kelly, resetting your clock, just wanting to go, not wanting to deal with all the BS that comes with the gig. Ryan Grubb leaving, these position coaches leaving, all of them. They all have specific reasons. But the current situation of coaching at the college level is part of the decision-making process for every single one. You can't deny it. They've brought it up. You talk to coaches, they bring it up constantly. So, yes, the ones who do get a chance to go to the NFL are going to take that chance or take that option more often than not because they want to get all this crap off their plate. They want to just go coach football. And my bigger concern isn't the overall quantity of coaches that are going to do it because, as Bud has mentioned, there's only so many jobs and these teams are going to have to want you. But who do they want? They want the best. They want the brightest. If you look at the NFL, the average age of an NFL head coach is going way down. Sean McVay used to be the baby. Now he's like the older veteran, and he's like 39 or 40. I don't even know how old he is anymore at this point. But they keep hiring younger coaches, and these guys are poaching from the college level, younger, innovative, smart coaches. There is a brain drain going on in the college football coaching community where a lot of the innovators, which is kind of what separated college from the NFL for so long, like you would see Chip Kelly was running that offense at college years before the NFL realized it existed. Mm-hmm. And then they hired him in the NFL. We've seen kind of implement styles, but now all those brains and all those plays are going to the NFL. And in college, it's not to say there aren't smart coaches left. There are. There's like 1,000 jobs. There's always going to be really smart coaches at the college level. It's just you're seeing more that it's about the coaches that are sticking at college are typically going to be A, great recruiters, or B, just very good coaches, like position coaches, guys who are great at development and all that kind of stuff. And those are great to have. But the offensive and defensive innovators, the guys with new ideas, most of those guys are going to the NFL. And I feel like that is a problem for college in the long run.
Makes sense.
I also think it's going to last very long.
They need to change things, yeah.
Well, I don't think it's going to last very long. Just if you look at all the different court cases going on, I mean, most of these guys are going to bitch and complain about something every single offseason. Like, as long as I've known coaches, it was something. It was transfer portal, and then it was satellite camps, and then before that it was oversigning, and then it was cost of attendance. Remember, cost of attendance was gonna really, really ruin the sport. And I just that these guys, I mean, look, I'm sure if people were calling us for our opinions on things, we would bitch about things at our jobs, right? I mean, I really like our jobs, but like still, there's things we all would complain about because these guys get reported on by media. Their thoughts get parroted out there. I hear the exact same complaints, but you know, most of them can't leave and won't leave. And a lot of their skill sets are much closer to that of a high school coach than of an NFL coach. So if you really want to make a choice that you can actually make, it's like, do you want to take a 90% pay cut and go make $48,000 to go coach high school ball? You know,
but as we discussed, like if it does not change soon and this extends over long periods of time, then yeah, there's going to be, like,
yeah,
there's going to be noticeable impact. There's just
If it's like 15 more years, then I think we could see an impact. If it's like 3 or 4, I don't think it's really.
If they get this fixed by the time that the 2024 cycle are seniors, you know.
Yeah. Right. I mean,
Bud is limiting his outrage because he believes in you, college football.
He
is harnessing it for other areas of his life, both professional and personal, because he believes that the future of college football will be different in the next 3-4 years in a way that does not have the current issues for coaches. They do have issues right now. All right, you want to keep going with other assistant carousel stuff, or do you have other breaking news?
No, that was the other stuff. So I don't have anything new on Kentucky offensive coordinator. Do you guys? Is it Butch, I guess?
Yeah.
Is that official? Camden.
It's not official, but it's sort of looking that way. Right? I mean,
they run the ball well at Boise.
Right? You're getting in there. You're getting somebody who's going to come in, and Mark Stoops is going to say, hey, look, here's what we do here. We run the football. We have a physical offensive line. Hamden's like, gotcha. Mm-hmm. I know exactly what to do with that. So stylistically, it is not a hire, which is going to make me be like, Liam Cohen, at one point, we were like, Liam Cohen and Devin Leary, watch out. Kentucky football is going to be back. Now, if you're really smart, you might have heard the Cover 3 podcast and Bud Elliott be like, guys, I don't know if the wide receivers have changed. So, you know, we'll see about that. And sure enough, what was the strength of Kentucky's offense? Running the daggum football with a physicality and a violence that allows them to be able to be effective opposite a somewhat strong defense. Hamden keeps that in line. What about Michigan? The latest pieces, we get Steve Klinkscales being the latest to go. We already lost Minter. We already lost Elston. We're just continuing to see the pieces shuffle around there. As you're looking at Sharon Moore and his staff for 2024, Tom, where do you think the needs, the latest updates, developments, where are your concern or interest at for that group?
It's similar to what we talked about earlier in the show with Alabama, although I think Kalen DeBoer, you can say, has a deeper tree of people to hire from because of his experience at multiple head coach jobs at different stops. And Sharon Moore does not really have that yet, but Michigan does have plenty of connections. And as we've seen, like Wink Martindale is expected to come in to be the defensive coordinator. I don't know if they've made that official or not. So the Ravens Michigan coaching tree is still very much alive and well, although I will say
Baltimore before New York.
Yeah, he was with the Giants last year, but he was originally in Baltimore for years as their defensive coordinator, and he was one of the mentors for both Mike McDonald and Jesse Minter and helped him. But I will say, like, it will get talked about as just getting from the Ravens tree, everything's going to change. Minter and McDonald learned under Martindale, but they do not have very similar approaches in that Michigan blitzed more than average, but they weren't blitz heavy with McDonald and Minter. Wink Martindale and the Giants blitzed 60% of the time last year. When he was at Baltimore, he was very blitz heavy. So that could be a kind of significant change that you see with Martindale in Michigan. And I don't know if I'm optimistic about how that'll work out, because it's one thing to blitz a lot and leave your corners in man all the time when you have NFL corners. when you're a college team, yeah, you have Will Johnson and you're going to have good corners because you're Michigan, but you don't really have a team full of NFL players at every single spot. So it could be problematic, and it kind of reminds me, kind of could be Todd Grantham-ish. Just leave it at that. I don't think Martindale is very as predictable as Todd Grantham was, particularly on third downs, but it could be very high variance on defense next year for Michigan if Martindale brings the same approach.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see how this works out. So Steve Klingscale left after initially he had decided to stay, and right. then he decided to leave. I don't know if the deciding to stay was, you know, was genuine as far as wanting to really stay in college, or if it was a leverage play, right, to get more money out of the NFL job, which I think he ultimately probably got, because NFL jobs don't pay as well in many cases, not all, as college jobs. But I believe his son is a freshman DB at Michigan. So my guess here is that there was some want to stay, but also if you're reading the tea leaves, like basically that entire Michigan staff is gone.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of an issue. I don't really know. Now they did hire, I believe, Greg Scruggs, the D-line coach from Wisconsin. So I assume that somebody Sharon knows. I was doing my research for it this morning, but I didn't really dig into that one too much. But I will note that is two defensive coaches gone from Wisconsin who are going to schools now that played in the college football playoff. So Alabama took the Wisconsin DB coach as well. So Luke Fickell certainly probably put together a better staff than some realized if Michigan and Alabama are plucking away your coaches. So if you're a Wisconsin fan, that's kind of a bummer, but also maybe a sign that Fickell really knows how to hire guys.
Yeah, but you just got Alex Grinch. Don't worry.
Yeah.
He knows how to hire guys. That's how you talk yourself into that one. If you're feeling bad about Alex Grinch, maybe even getting a promotion out of this, who knows? Maybe he should be your new co-defensive coordinator. He knows how to hire guys. So there you go. We got Boston College, Bill O'Brien starting to put together his staff. Don't always see this often, bud. Strength and conditioning coach Craig Fitzgerald leaving the University of Florida Gators to go join Bill O'Brien's staff at Boston College.
Where he was just hired. I mean, they made this guy the head of strength conditioning like a month ago.
And he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Why? What that mean?
Napier cited a long-standing relationship with Bill O'Brien. I guess they've worked together before. This guy came from the New York Giants. So all these coaches fleeing the NFL, like Deshaun Foster to UCLA, and this guy going back to be a strength conditioning coach in college. No, I'll buy that, the long-standing relationship. I'll also buy that. I mean, I think there's a high likelihood that Billy Napier is not the coach at Florida in 2025. All of the hot seat lists are going to have him fairly high up, I would think. FanDuel has their win total at 5.5. If they miss a bowl again, I think it's pretty much all she wrote. So from a resetting your clock, restart your clock type thing, it's very likely that you get to live in Boston for the next 4 years, unless Bill O'Brien were to leave of his own volition, because I don't think that BC is going to up and fire Bill O'Brien anytime soon. Coaches never keep, almost never, unless it's an internal promotion, they almost never keep the strength coach. So if Napier gets fired, Fitzgerald's also gone, and it sucks to have to go live in a place for only 1 year and uproot your family. So if the money's at all similar, I think you'd rather go live in a place for 4 years as opposed to one.
And we didn't have any of this planned because I didn't get the news part of it yet. But why is there a lot of hand wringing over who's calling plays at Florida? Are you in on that?
Yeah, I've seen this. Like a lot of Florida fans wanted to get a different offensive coordinator. I saw Billy over the weekend at the Nike coaching clinic down here in Orlando, which I like going to. It's a good
time.
Did you boo him?
No, I mean, look, he's extremely detail oriented. State
bud just shows up.
Just walk by.
Burning gold body paint shows up to a coach's clinic.
I wasn't sure what he was going to talk about because a lot of these guys, like the title on the coaching clinic when you go is just Gators football or Seminole football or
championship culture. And they show you the same slideshow that they show their team on the first day of fall camp.
Right.
And it was like, this is how we practice. This is what we do. Yes, I've been to a lot of those.
So, and sometimes they give you good stuff.
Sure. Right?
I enjoyed Napier's, like extremely detail oriented with the quarterback work. He went over like their evaluation process of Graham Mertz in the portal. And then, okay, are these flaws something we can live with? If not, are these flaws something that we can fix? Do we still see some of the original physical ability that we saw with the guy that made him, you know, a five-star or high four-star, depending on the service, coming out? And they thought they did. I thought they did a nice job with him. You know, he noted that they were basically playing like guards at offensive tackle this year, so that was a problem. He said that a couple times as far as their pass protection. So we'll see how that gets better. But I kind of forgot what the original question was, and I'm just
What is the hand wringing? I sense Florida fan, like there is some real Florida fan consternation over who's calling plays and who's running the offense in 2024, and I did not get it.
Well, they have two offensive line coaches, and they had a boatload of offensive line penalties. At one point, they were leading the nation in short yardage or in EPA loss to short yardage penalties, which is.
That's a horrible stat.
Horrendous. Yeah. Also, they were leading the nation in EPA loss due to special teams penalties, which if you have a game changer coordinator as your special teams coach title, well, the game definitely changed, just not in the direction that you wanted it to. I don't know. I don't think Billy Napier is a first of all, I think he's probably a very good quarterback coach. I don't know if he's a good offensive coordinator or not. My real question with him is, does he know how to manage the – like everybody works for Saban knows what the plan is as far as hire this many guys – this many titles, this many polos. But knowing you got to hire them and knowing how to manage them is a huge difference. And that's where you see a lot of these Saban guys fail.
Mm. We'll say,
as
far as the play calling thing, whether warranted or not, it might be, it might not be. Fans know very little about play calling, or at least nowhere near as much as they think they do. When everything's going wrong the way it's going wrong at Florida, they're just going to be concerned about every single damn thing you're doing. Like if you were calling plays last year and it sucked, why is he still calling plays? If you weren't calling plays last year and it sucked, why isn't he calling plays? That's really going to be the root of what's going on in the hand wringing.
Also, the defense was far worse than the offense last year. However, yes. you just got a new DC before the last season. So if you're a UF fan, you really can't be like, let's get a new DC again. You have to hang your hat on the defense was young. The defense was banged up, and it's the second year in Austin Armstrong's system, so it's going to get better. So the only thing really left to complain about without sounding completely unreasonable is the offensive coordinator and the play calling.
Yeah, how many games did Florida lose last year where they scored 30 points or more? Like four?
Probably quite a few.
It's not the offense that's the problem.
One last thing before we get out of here. Again, the breaking news this morning, DeShaun Foster named the new head coach at UCLA. We addressed that a little bit earlier on in the show. But just, you know, in the wake of the Super Bowl with a couple minutes we have left, San Francisco 49ers reportedly did not know the overtime rules were going to be different in the playoffs.
What? Oh, like the players?
They knew. The players weren't really all that
familiar. They thought the mentality was if they go down and score a touchdown, the game would be over. Because in the regular season, remember, field goal extends it, touchdown can end it. But in the playoffs, both teams are guaranteed to possess it regardless of the outcome. Now, they ended up kicking a field goal, so it's not like that would have been a big difference. But the decision to take the ball, I think, is reportedly being influenced by 49ers comments after the game in terms of not knowing the adjustment that had been made to the rule for the postseason.
I had made a joke. Go ahead, Tom.
I was going to say, Kyle Shanahan said after the game he chose to take the ball because he wanted it third. So the 49ers coaching staff knew. Maybe the players, some didn't know about it, but the coaching staff knew the rules.
So he expected that he would get two shots at it, that he was going to score, Kansas City was going to score, and then they would get it third? Is that kind of
what his thought process was? If it's tied, because both teams get the ball no matter what.
Correct.
After that, it's sudden death.
Right.
So he wanted the ball third, just in case they had to go to it. He didn't want to have be on defense when it went to sudden death against Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, I tweeted out like, well, looks like Deion won't be making the worst overtime decision in 2024. But I think this is actually somewhat defensible. I initially was ripping it. I understand the logic of it. The problem is the assumptions that you have to make here are interesting. One, like, does the team going second, like if you score a touchdown and the team going second, are they more likely to go for two to end the game right there, knowing that a field goal from the ensuing possession ends the ball game?
The Chiefs said that. The Chiefs players said, we've been talking about playoff overtime since training camp, and we always knew we wanted it second And if it was touchdown, touchdown, we were going for two and the game was going to end on that possession.
I also think that it is defensible from the standpoint that if it's a really high scoring game, then, you know, I kind of think going second is smarter. Because if you get a stop, then you have the information you need. If it's a lower scoring game, then I think going first is probably more defensible and or potentially correct, or at least just coin flippy, because the likelihood that you get the stop and don't allow a touchdown, like if you go field goal, the likelihood you get a stop and don't allow the touchdown, which ultimately they did allow the touchdown, is higher. So San Fran's decision is somewhat predicated on how they had played defense to that point and also what the expectation was going into the game. I don't think anybody really thought that KC was going to score mid-30s on San Fran's defense, although it's certainly possible. Mahomes just ended up playing like Mahomes, right? Which is tough to beat.
Analytically, there's no answer because we have no analytics. This is the first time we've done these rules. We have no idea how it's going to play out in the long run yet. But I will say what's interesting is what I like about the rules is that there are arguments to be made for doing both options. But yeah, I would kick if I won the coin toss simply because I prefer knowing what I have to do when I do get the ball. And if we get to the third possession and it's sudden death, well, that's on me for failing anyway. Because like you look at the situation, San Francisco goes down, they get the field goal, but then Kansas City gets the ball and they had a 4th-and-1 at the 23.
Yep.
And they went for it because they had to. But if you kick in that situation and Kansas City is facing a 4th-and-1 at its own 23, are they going for it? You're putting a whole hell of a lot of pressure on them, whereas Kansas City was then able to call plays knowing, well, we're going for it on 4 downs no matter what. So on 3rd-and-6, we can run the ball, set up a 4th-and-1 if we have to. We can do anything. It's much more difficult, I think, to defend in that situation, and you have the advantage of knowing what you need offensively. But then also you have Patrick Mahomes, which might negate everything. And on the other side of this 49ers decision, you could argue if you're Shanahan, my defense had just been on the field for like 8 minutes and was absolutely gassed. And I didn't really feel like sending them right back out there in that situation. So I don't know if there's a wrong answer, but I do think that if I'm in that choice, I'm kicking every time until proven mathematically that it's stupid to do so.
The other issue you have when trying to model this is sort of your behavioral assumptions that if you go down there and score a field goal, you are sort of assuming that the team going second, if pressed, will kick the field goal to tie the ball game, right? But and with the Chiefs, that's probably a somewhat safe assumption for the most part because they are
kickers so good.
Well, they're very conservative overall. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Like it sometimes
they try to buck her out there a lot happily. It's like, why? Right. Come on, this is gonna be automatic.
But do those behavioral assumptions, do they hold if the team that is going second knows that the next possession is sudden death? Like you're modeling this based on sort of normal behavior that the team will probably kick the field goal and to extend the game. But if you know that like if the opponent team comes down and gets a field goal after you kick it to tie, you may go for 4th down and say, hey, we're going to try to end this game on this possession right here. So it's a tough question. I actually think that what Shanahan did is much more defensible than taking the ball first in college overtime.
Yes.
Okay, so
that robs you of an information advantage without the reciprocal value.
How would you use what we have learned from overtime in the Super Bowl and apply it to college? How could we fix college overtime?
You can't. You can't because the NFL can't do this in the regular season.
I would get rid of this 2-point conversion nonsense, and I would start college possessions at like the 45. You have to get a first down to reasonably kick a field goal. And I think we would have most overtimes done within 1 to 2 overtimes, not like I don't want to go to this 2-point shootout stuff.
Yeah, but the 2-point conversion off is not my favorite.
But the format for playoff overtime in the NFL is not feasible in the regular season for
sure. Right. Sure. But you mentioned
the windows.
Well, the thing that was interesting to me that you just said, Tom, is the fact that there is a debate.
And this is why it's a good
in college there's not even a debate.
No.
It is the result of the coin toss that
then unless you take the ball and then you defend it and then you pretend there's a debate.
But you know, there is none. Like, they do the coin toss in overtime. If you win the toss, then you choose to go on defense first, and it sets in motion the entire overtime. There is no, at least in our collective opinion here on the Cover 3 podcast, hire us for all your college football consulting on and off the field. There is no sensible other option if you win the toss than to go on defense first.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. TV windows be damned. I saw what Penn State and Illinois did.
It's awesome.
The TV windows definitely play a role in that, but I think even just more from the, you can't have these guys playing that much football.
Yeah.
Because you're just going to get a bunch of injuries. And they're already suffering a ton of injuries, and you're already probably asking everybody to play too many games to begin with. So adding like extra quarters on games is just, yeah.
Pushing it back to the 40. That's a good one.
Yes. That's what they should have done from the start.
Throw that on the list. Official suggestions from the Cover 3 podcast. All right. So we've still got a few more different pieces before we can come anywhere close to grading the assistant coaching carousel. But we are going to have more pieces that come along the way, and we'll be sure to break all those down coming up on Wednesday, 11 a.m. Reminder, every single Thursday, we get interactive by jumping into the big old bag of mail. So if you go and leave us a 5-star review, and in that review, put your question, we'll tackle it in a future mailbag episode. As always, they are also interactive with the Cover 3 tailgate. Come and show up, drop us a question in the tailgate, in the chat. We will go ahead and tackle that as well. And you can follow him on Twitter at BudElliott3. You can follow him at Tom Fernelli. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.